This is Real Life with Lisa Jesswine on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Lisa Jesswine.
Okay, so we're going to talk about something today that you might not even know is the most common mental illness in the United States, affecting 40 million adults age 18 and older. That's about 18.1% of the population every year. And you might not even consider this or know that this is a form of mental illness, because we're going to talk about anxiety disorders. And see, right then, everyone probably went, oh, yeah, I felt that before. Anxiety, stress, panic. And we have someone with us today who not only wrote about this, but has lived this. This is Corinne Zupko. How you doing, Corinne?
I am great. I'm so psyched to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. So, you know, Corinne is an author and a licensed counselor, but more than that, you're really a survivor. Can I call you that?
Yeah, absolutely. I like anxiety veteran.
Oh, girl, now that one I'm going to use. Anxiety veteran. So can you give us a little bit of background about when you first sort of thought this isn't normal?
Well, that's a hard thing for me to identify, because I felt anxious most of my life. It kind of was my normal, and I didn't realize it was abnormal. I received my first psychiatric diagnosis at the age of 2. I was diagnosed with separation anxiety disorder. When I was in college, that was when panic disorder came. I started suffering from very out-of-the-blue, uncontrollable panic attacks that were just terrifying. That is really when I had a clue, because it was so bad. That's when I started to realize that, like, oh, this actually isn't normal. This isn't a fun way to live at all, because it's so debilitating.
No, one of them had you on the bathroom floor in your dorm room freaking out, talking to your mom.
Yeah, that was my very first panic attack. I did not know what was happening. I thought I was dying. You know, you get this like sense of just dread and impending doom, and it's like, you get tunnel vision and you can't really focus on anything else except the anxiety. And I was so shaky. I thought I was having a heart attack. It was horrible.
And for everybody, you know, you may have experienced different levels of this, different aspects of it. And, you know, whether you call it stress or anxiety or, you know, I'm panicking, you know, it's all from the same source, right?
It is. You know, I very much believe now that anxiety is a spiritual problem, and it's the source of anxiety is from a disconnection with our self, our capital S self, this higher part of our mind. The further we get into being drawn away from that, with the busyness, with, you know, getting sucked into everything that we have, our endless to-do list, the further we get taken away from that, the more anxious and ungrounded we can feel.
And we can have these bouts of, you know, separating from ourselves when we're going through other things. And the reason I bring this up is because I have had only one really full-blown panic attack in my life. And it was while I was going through my kidney transplant and a bunch of other surgeries. And I was in my apartment, and suddenly all of the walls literally felt like they were moving in on me. And I started panicking and breathing heavy, and I ran outside in the middle of the parking lot. I couldn't get far enough away from a building. And so how does that factor in when it says, you know, disassociating or pulling away from ourself, if it happens to happen while we're going through a major trauma in our life?
Well, that, I'm glad that you brought that up, because panic attacks like that can happen to very healthy individuals. You know, you don't have to have a diagnosable mental illness or anxiety disorder to have a panic attack. So they can show up in very, very intense times of stress. But the sort of overall very like holistic approach that I teach in my book is about really developing a sense of spirituality and connectedness with that very deep part of yourself, so that it's there, so that you feel that you can tap into that in those times of stress to prevent that anxiety from escalating.
Now, you call that the inner teacher. So we have the inner teacher and we have the ego, right?
Yes. So there's sort of two thought systems in our mind that we can conceptualize. The ego thought system is that fearful thought system, that voice that we all know so well in our head, that's full of self-judgment, judgment of others, fear and worry. And then the other voice in our mind, that's sort of opposite of the ego, is this voice of our inner teacher, or in the book, I refer to it as your inner therapist. It's the loving part of our mind, the part of our mind that is calm always, even though the outside picture might seem a little bit nuts. It tells us that we are whole and complete and worthy of love. And that's the voice that we really have to learn how to listen to get back in touch with that true self.
Now, even though this whole anxiety journey that you had was like one of the most terrifying experiences, and I know from having gone through one, it was really terrifying. And I can only imagine if you've dealt with this for decades, how is that a good thing? Because you also called it your greatest teacher.
Yeah. So I actually wouldn't trade it for anything, because it brought me to where I am now. It brought me to my knees, willing and open to try anything to help find relief within myself. So it became my greatest teacher, because it actually was a catalyst for me to embark on a spiritual journey and find inner peace within myself. So for that reason, I'm very grateful for it.
And you base some or a lot of the book off of A Course in Miracles. Can you describe for somebody what is A Course in Miracles in case they don't know?
Definitely. So A Course in Miracles is just a book, and it can be purchased anywhere online or in bookstores. And it is a complete spiritual pathway. I believe it is a pathway of true awakening. And the book itself has three different parts. It has a textbook, a workbook, and a manual for teachers. And I just dove in when I began studying it. But the text is actually kind of hard to understand. It's a little bit dense, maybe a lot dense and very theoretical. But the workbook has a lesson for every day of the year, and the manual for teachers is much more readable. So I always recommend for folks to start with those two parts of the book when they're first diving in.
Mm-hmm. And you do have activities planned throughout the book, which is really nice. And you guys, these aren't the really long, drawn out activity ones. You know, normally you go into these books, you're like, man, this is going to take forever. But I really do like the way you have the book set up. And I have to tell you, this one of the things you talk about in the book, which is projection, right?
Mm-hmm.
It happened to me right after I got done reading the section on projection. And so can I just tell you what happened?
Please. Yeah.
Okay. So I was watching something that was like one of these magazine shows, and it was about someone like invading in the home or something like that. Well, I live alone and I've never been scared in my house. I'm very safe in my house. I never have feared in my house. Right after I watched that, I ended up leaving lights on in my house, and I went upstairs and I felt nervous. And I thought, oh my gosh. And then I just read in the book, I'm like, I'm projecting that would happen to me just because I just watched it.
Yeah. You know, commercials and home security systems and and vaccines, like they all, you know, thrive on this, like, oh my gosh, that might happen to me. And so I need to quickly do something. But you're absolutely right. That's a beautiful example, because we take on something, you know, we get ideas in our mind and then we see it outside of ourselves. Suddenly we feel unsafe when we totally felt safe before. The example that I give in the book is that in the wintertime, I tend to be a little cold and I don't really like it so much. I love the summer. So if I look out the window and I see a squirrel and I think, oh, that squirrel, poor squirrel, must be freezing. It's not freezing. It's fine. I'm the one who's projecting my thoughts, my beliefs onto it. So that's a really important thing that we need to look at in this process of healing.
And the squirrel's probably staring at you going, lady, food. Do you have anything in there? It's not cold. The squirrel
can't
wants food. Yeah, really. Come on. You can't read this book without feeling a connection to the movie The Matrix. And you even talk a little bit about that. Can you explain how they relate?
Yeah. So it's so funny that you brought that up, because you know, in The Matrix, there's that scene where Neo is offered, I think it's the red pill or the blue pill. And one, if he takes it, you know, he's never going to see the world again the same way. Or the other one, he could just, you know, forget it all and go back to the way he was doing things before. Mm-hmm. My experience of studying A Course in Miracles is like that. It changes your worldview, because it helps you, again, conceptualize that this ego dream, these ego thoughts, these projections that we have are not the truth, and that the truth is love, that we are love. And that's what we are being led to wake up to. And in that awakening to love, that's where anxiety falls away. That's how it fell away for me. The more I've gone this way, and I'm not saying that I'm perfect or there, but I'm still on this journey. As I began that process of awakening to love, the anxiety, it had to fall away. So I don't suffer from panic attacks anymore. I don't have a level of anxiety that I used to at all. So I really like that scene in The Matrix, because it really relates to the course in that way for me.
Okay, so devil's advocate for a minute. Someone's out there going, yeah, lady, so all I got to do is think about love and my anxiety is going to go away.
I'm so glad you said that also, because this is number one, a process. But when I talk about love, I'm actually talking about love with a capital L. I'm talking about spirit. I'm talking about God. But we have such baggage around that word, God, that I really like to use the word love instead. So this really is a process of awakening to our eternal self, the love that we all share, that divine energy within us. And if you knew that you were not a body, if you knew that you were safe and taken care of and eternal, how could you be afraid? So we can't intellectually remember that on our own. We need a thought system outside of our own to help us get there. And that's why I talk about turning to your inner teacher or your inner therapist, this higher part of your mind, to experience these shifts.
And I love this part of the book. Now you have the opportunity to set the cornerstone of a new foundation of inner peace, rather than continuing to rely on a termite-infested foundation of anxiety. Because that is so true. It will just fall out from underneath you if you aren't willing to make changes. And if somebody is suffering from what you suffered from, and what is one of the first steps that someone can take if they really do want to change?
Well, willingness is, I have so many steps I could share. Willingness, I believe, is the precursor to all change. You have to want it. You have to be willing to change. You have to be willing to do the work. Change just doesn't necessarily happen by itself. We have to show up. We have to do the work, and we have to make an effort. So if we can be first willing to see differently, willing to be open to the idea that maybe the way that I'm seeing things, maybe it's not working for me. You know, is it bringing me peace? Not so much. So maybe there's another way. So that willingness is really the first step that we can embody and embrace in this process of healing.
As Dr. Phil would say, how's that working for you? So if it's not working, stop doing it. One of the first steps you could take, perhaps, pick up Corinne's book, From Anxiety to Love, A Radical New Approach for Letting Go of Fear and Finding Lasting Peace. Just the thought of that sounds absolutely delicious. So, it's achievable. It's achievable. So you talk about being willingness being the first thing to do. What can anxiety sufferers do if they are right in the middle of an attack, a panic attack?
So in the middle of a panic attack, fear is out of control. It's just like exploding all over the walls. It's really intense. And so we need to meet ourselves where we are at. And one of the ways that I like to help folks who are experiencing panic attacks and things that worked for me, if you right now just check in with your torso, check in with your torso of your body. And as you breathe, and I'm not asking you to deep breathe or do anything like that, but just as you're breathing, notice, is your belly tight? Is your belly moving as you're breathing, or is it tight and locked? And so your breath is mostly coming from your chest, because when we're anxious, when we're stressed, we tend to breathe from high up in the chest and we're tightening our stomach. That's also a cultural message, because we're told we gotta, you know, suck it in.
All right.
So if you think about, though, a baby or a puppy, they breathe with their whole belly. So if you can just sit and just soften your abs, you don't have to do anything else but just soften those abs, that's going to bring about a sense of relief and start to make room for the calmness to come back. So it's changing your physiology. In addition, if you're in the height of the anxiety, you know, going for a walk, getting out, changing your scenery can be really helpful. And knowing above all that the anxiety attack is in time, it will come to an end.
That's probably about the most important thing that you can say right there. Because you do feel like you're going crazy, one, because, you know, part of your mind is telling you this is irrational. Why do I feel like these walls are closing in on me or that I can't breathe? Because obviously that is a physical object. It is not moving at me. So why do I feel that way? And so hearing that it will come to an end is something that actually brings peace.
Yeah. And I like how you said the piece about remembering that you're not going crazy.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the main concerns that people have is, oh my gosh, I'm going crazy. I'm losing my mind. No, you're not. You're just having a panic attack and it's going to pass.
Yeah. No. And okay. So when I got to this point of the book, it was really funny because I think you wrote, I had trouble with this too. And that's about that quest for specialness or about being, and I was like, what do you mean? I'm special. Come on. can you explain that for me?
Yeah. So A Course in Miracles teaches that we are here in Earth School because we wanted to experience specialness. In truth, in oneness, we are all equally special, which also means that nobody is special because we're all truly, truly equal. So here we seek to be special. We seek different, you know, to live in a cool place or to have a cool title or to be an author or, you know, achieve these certain things. And this pursuit of specialness is really an ego pursuit. It's really just the ego trying to better itself. There's nothing, we can't beat ourselves up for it because we all do this, but we have to just own it. We have to just be willing to look at it and be willing to see it differently.
Yeah, because I was like, I think I get this. And I want everyone to understand this book is written in a very digestible manner, which means this isn't a lot of really hard things for you to understand because there's really great examples. And, you know, the stories, especially that you tell about your own life, bring things into focus. I mean, Corinne goes into one where she said, oh, I learned a lesson about when you were on the phone with your friend and talking about, and it was about projection. I think that one was projection. I think that was in projection when you were talking to your friend and, you know, later on it came around that yes, your friend was dealing with something, but you sort of projected like, we got to talk about this right now. And
right.
I need to be right and let you know you misspoke right now. And
right.
That's the ego, right? That was you listening to the ego portion.
Yeah. I remember that example. It was with a friend who said something that contradicted something she previously said. So I brought it up wanting to point it out. And it was just like an explosion. They just got like really upset and just kind of weren't ready to go there. And so, yeah, I was coming at it from that place of wanting to correct my friend, which was not helpful, not loving for where they were at. And it blew up in my face. So it was a great learning opportunity to sometimes pause before you speak and think about, you know, where am I coming from? What's my intention in bringing this up? Is it to correct another? Is it to make another wrong? Or is it, you know, to be supportive and loving?
You know, and you ask, you know, big questions in this book, like, who are we really? And I love when you say you are not who you think you are. And that is glorious news. I mean, because we aren't the fearful, freaked out, anxious you is not the true you, despite how compellingly real that fear and anxiety seem. So I have a friend who always says, well, I'm just always nervous. I'm just always anxious. And I feel like saying, isn't that exhausting living like that? And she really doesn't understand that that actually is a choice. And I am not by any means demeaning anyone who may have to take medication for mental illness. But choosing about being anxious and always being frustrated and all of these sort of negative emotions just add to all that stress and anxiety.
And here's a really fun thing that we can do when we realize if you're saying I'm always anxious, you're saying that you, who you are, is always anxious. But if you say I am noticing anxiety or I'm noticing that I'm very frequently, you know, anxious, now you're noticing a state that's actually, you're implying that it's separate from you. You are that awareness and you're noticing that this is happening. So that if we find ourselves, for listeners, you know, who say, oh, I'm an anxious person or I'm anxious, see if you can play with your language and say instead, I'm noticing anxiety, because you'll start to see that there's actually a difference between that experience of anxiety and your awareness. Your awareness actually isn't anxious.
Yeah, your awareness is watching it going, okay, I see that. That's not me, but I see it over there.
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't really become a participant in it. You're just sort of standing outside of it, which makes a lot of sense. So, you know, those of us who have or continually suffer with anxiety, you talk about what is the greatest strength that those of us that have or are currently suffering with anxiety have. What is our strength, our greatest strength?
We have an easy time recognizing fear. Speaking from my own experience, I am so hyper aware of that anxious, fearful, tiny little thought. I can sense it when it's like a molecule, you know, when it's this tiny little feeling that just feels a little bit off. We as anxiety sufferers have a very easy time recognizing fear and repurposed rather than just kind of going with it and letting the fear, you know, continue on. We now have an option to say, oh, I'm noticing this fear. And rather than just leaving it at that, we can now bring that fear, we can now bring that anxiety to our inner teacher and ask for another way, to ask for a shift, to ask for a miracle.
And since you're so highly sensitive about that, do you pick up on it in other people?
I definitely do. Yes, I can definitely sense those types of things. But I've also come to feel that if I'm sensing it, you know, I truly, truly believe that we're love. I truly believe that that divine love is what we're made of. So if I'm sensing some fear in another person as well, then that's still an opportunity for me to ask for a shift in my own mind because I want to join with the love in them and not the fear in them.
A great way to start your shift right now is reading From Anxiety to Love, A Radical New Approach for Letting Go of Fear and Finding Lasting Peace. We've been talking to Corinne Zupko, and we have come to the part of the program called the RL3, which is the real life three silly, goofy questions that you have graciously agreed to answer. Is that correct?
I'm so excited. Yeah. Bring it on.
Dun, da, da, da. First question. What song evokes the strongest memories for you?
What song evokes the strongest memories for me? I could go any way.
Yep. And I want you to choose the path.
I'm going to go back to my childhood in the like 90s with Guns N' Roses and any of that Appetite for Destruction album will take me right back to middle school.
Okay. Remy in the studio just did like the devil horns or whatever that is. And he is. So you were a Guns N' Roses girl. Get out.
Nobody
would know that by looking at your little angelic face on the back of this book. That's a great answer. Okay, question number two. If you were to own a fabulously impractical car, what would it be?
A fabulously impractical car. I would probably... Gosh, I'm so practical. It's hard for me to answer this question. I have my heart set on a Subaru, I can't think of what it's called, but it's kind of like an SUV size. It has space and it's just so nice to ride.
Be impractical. Come on, girl. You got like tons of money was just thrown at you and you're going to buy whatever you can. And everyone would look at you like, I just can't believe she bought that car. What would it be? Go crazy.
But I wish I cared about cars enough.
She's like, I just got my Subaru, and because it's so fun.
A cute little convertible Miata.
There we go.
Yeah,
now we can see you and Guns N' Roses is blasting out. Well, she's got the top down. It's awesome. All right. The third and final question is where we find out your fantasy name. So we need the name of the first pet you ever had and the name of the street you grew up on.
The name of my first pet was Sarah,
uh-huh.
S-E-R-A, and the street that I grew up on was Little Hill Road.
Sarah Little Hill. I like that. Maybe that's also your American Indian name. Everybody, Sarah Little Hill. What kind? Was it a dog, a cat?
A cat, black cat.
Okay. Now, as you've grown up, are you more of a cat person or a dog person?
I developed an allergy to cats when I went away to college. So I love cats, but sadly, I can't have them anymore. So I've just grown naturally into being a dog person and a chicken person. I have pet chickens.
Now that's, I love that chicken person all the way. And I think she means as a pet, not as food, everybody. So that's
a pet. They're my feather babies.
We are so excited that you decided to join us today. And we thank you for all of your time, attention, and love. From anxiety to love, a radical new approach for letting go of fear and finding lasting peace. Corinne, we've got all of your contact information up on our site. Everybody, this is the time. This is time for you to come out of your anxiety. Okay. Give it a first step here. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.